Well, Len, it's been an exciting time for golf in the last week. Both you and I had the privilege to attend and work the Ryder Cup up at Whistling Straits in Haven, Wisconsin, and quite a time for the United States. So a well-deserved and probably well-needed blowout of the European squad. And for once, it's time to let the Europeans go back to the drawing board and figure out how they can right the ship by the time 2023 in Italy comes around.
Well, much needed win for the U.S. to be sure, but I have to admit, I eat humble pie on this one. I certainly did not see that coming. I really didn't think this U.S. team, as young as it was and inexperienced in Ryder Cup play, would have a chance. But I got a lot. Steve Stricker, that was a gutty move to put together a team as young as that one. And he was absolutely right by bringing in a flood of new players there that who didn't have bad experiences in previous Ryder Cups. It gave the team a fresh outlook, and they responded in spades with a record victory.
Some of the national publications are already predicting who might make the team for the U.S. 2 years from now, and a couple of those picks that Stricker made are already listed as guys who are going to be snubbed in 23, including Daniel Berger and Harris English. So we'll have to see if that happens. I was a little surprised at the pick of Scottie Scheffler, but Scheffler really proved himself on Sunday going out and taking down world number one Jon Rahm. And Daniel Berger, he managed to win his final match, but overall, I think it showed that he was a Ryder Cup rookie, and I could see if he doesn't make the team again in 2 years. Harris English was in great position on 18 to win his match and put his approach in Pete Dice Creek in front of the green, and that was that. For the most part, the guys that Steve Stricker brought in did the job.
In Berger's defense, in his case, he will go down as in a sort of a historical footnote, because it was the point that he won in the last match. I mean, obviously that match was meaningless as far as the who would win the Ryder Cup was concerned. But his the point that he gained there was the one that pushed them over the record for number of points scored. Got him to 19-9. The record had been 18.5 points by the U.S. team, and I believe it was 1981. I don't know, but it's going to be awful hard to break the record of 19 points. That's really dominating a competition. But usually that last match, very rarely has it really come down to that final match. And there was no suspense this time other than the record being on the line. So kudos to Daniel, and he got the point. And the U.S. Has certainly reversed the trends from recent Ryder Cups.
Well, I thought it was interesting, post-official interview, so to speak, some of the European guys, the veteran guys, not only Captain Padraig Harrington, but Ian Poulter and Lee Westwood came out and, in essence, held court in an old-fashioned, we'll call it media scrum outside, and they were pretty honest and really interesting to listen to. And, you know, at some point, teams like this, they go through their transition, or as Ian Poulter referred to it, he said the U.S. made its youth movement this year, and he felt that Europe would have to make its youth movement in 2 years in Italy. The first guy that sort of admitted this could be it for him was Lee Westwood, who said, I'll be turning 49 in the spring, and by the time we get to Italy, I guess he would be 50, and sort of pointed out the fact that he didn't think time was on his side. And then the other question is Ian Poulter, and those two guys have had Ryder Cup magic for more than a few years. It seems like a couple of decades with them, but you got to believe both of them will fit in as vice captains and eventually captain his Team Europe. But the playing days could be done. And then you've got two other over 40 players on that team. Paul Casey, who a lot of the European media think will play in Italy, and that'll be it for him. And Sergio may have at least one, if not two more left in him. And those guys could obviously both be captains at some point in the future for Europe.
They certainly have a lot of veteran players. They can be vice captains for years and years. They won't be lacking in good leadership people involved. I think of the interviews that I remember from the final day, for the whole week, really, the most memorable was Rory McIlroy and the emotions that he showed after his team lost. Even though he had won his singles match, he was pretty much, I guess the strongest word would be, devastated by the collapse of the European team. That was a very touching display of emotions after everything was over.
Well, it goes to show how much those players on Team Europe over years really embraced the event. But the only thing was, is in recent years, it was almost like it was their event, and they're never supposed to lose, and they got a dose of reality. And for once, I find it interesting that the shoe is on the other foot. And they're going to have to rebuild and rethink how they put their team together. They're no longer in a convenient position just to roll out the guys that have had Ryder Cup magic all these years.
We'll see a much different European team. And I think that there's some real good reasoning for both sides to freshen their rosters each year a little bit, to have at least find a place or give very serious consideration to players who haven't been in the Ryder Cup before, because it certainly put a different spin on this year's.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how it all shakes out in Rome. And, you know, Steve Stricker made it very clear in the post-match press conference that he didn't think he would be back as captain, and said these things are kind of mapped out for years to come. And now there seems to be some debate. Stricker, 2-0 as a captain. He's won the President's Cup and the Ryder Cup. And in some ways, if you're Steve, you might say, you know what, I'm ready to go back to just playing golf. And in the future, if they want me to be a vice captain, that's fine. But I'm sure he and his wife and his family, they've donated a lot of time for, you know, a few years now with both events, pulling it all together. And maybe he'd just like to show up and not have to do as much in the years ahead.
Well, you certainly can't blame them. You're right. There's a lot of being the captain. There's a big difference between being the captain and being one of five vice captains. You can show your support for your team by being a vice captain, but that very time consuming, very emotionally charged job if you take on the captaincy duties.
You know, you have a really great event like this, as the Ryder Cup was at Medina in 2012. I mean, yeah, the U.S. team didn't win in the end, but it was a fun week, an entertaining week for most of the days. The people that went out there enjoyed great weather. They enjoyed the atmosphere, and it had to be for a year or two after Medina was over. People kept asking me, when is that event coming back to Medina? And now there's people saying, when is this coming back to Kohler? And the next available Ryder Cup on U.S. soil is 2041. There's already some talk that event might go to the new PGA facility in Texas, in Frisco, Texas. I know you've been down there in that area, but the place has really built up a lot since your initial visit. But I got to believe that the Ryder Cup and PGA are not coming back to Kohler anytime soon. It seems like the PGA of America did enough things to In the way they ran certain things and used certain products to upset the Kohler family a little bit. And I'm not sure that Herb Kohler wants the PGA back anytime soon. So we'll have to see what other destinations go PGA of America events. And, of course, now with the PGA being in May, probably not the best time of the year to hold it up in mid to northern Wisconsin anyway.
Well, best case scenario, Whistling Straits, I think, now ought to focus itself on the USGA and try to get a U.S. Open. And I'm like you. I don't know how the Ryder Cup won't wind up the next time around, the next time available date when it comes up in 2041, why it won't be at Frisco, because everything you hear is that all the big events are going to be played over there, and the Ryder Cup it hasn't been scheduled there yet, but I can't imagine it wouldn't be there right as soon as it's available.
That's a bit of a ways down the road. I know the next available U.S. Open, I believe, is 2029. I know that Aaron Hills in Wisconsin is hoping that they're in the mix after they will do the USGA Mid-Am next year. They have the Women's Open in 25, and they are hoping for another U.S. Open before the decade ends, and I think they believe they're strongly in the mix to get it. But then again, under new CEO, executive director, Michael Wan. You never know what kind of a directional shift there will be, as we saw when Mike Davis came in. Some things changed, and certain courses that had been in the rotas for various events were no longer prominent to host those championships again.
Yeah, that's right. Mike Wan, he could be pushing the USGA in a total new direction. It'll be interesting when the first sites of the Michael Wan era are announced for whatever event we talk about. We'll get a much better feel for where the USGA is going at that point.
Well, apparently Michael Wan is doing a little bit of a tour with many of the original USGA member clubs, you know, clubs that are over 100 years old, and maybe in some cases over 125 years old. And the general feeling is that Michael Wan would love to bring some sort of USGA event to these older original clubs. And now some of them may not have the room and the infrastructure to host a U.S. Open, but they could probably run smaller amateur championships. And I got to believe there'll be an announcement before too long that a lot of these older clubs are going to take an event. It might be a smaller scale event. And if it's a U.S. Open, it might be the U.S. Senior Women's Open, something like that. But I got to believe that Michael Wan seems to be his first order of business is to bring some of the original members back to the table and get them hosting USGA championships again.
Right, and that means, of course, for Chicago people here, Chicago Golf Club is certainly a great site. For we've seen that at the U.S. Senior Women's Open was held there. It's always it'd be a great thing to see something maybe a little different to the Chicago Golf Club. But I think Michael Wan's approach to that is a wise one. Underscores all the rich history of golf in America, and to go back to some of these older clubs, and I hope it all pans out.
Well, Len, it's been a busy week on the Chicago golf scene. There's been different things going on, and tonight, the every other year Illinois Golf Hall of Fame induction ceremony, and there's a bigger class going in this year, and obviously this event close to your heart, because it was 2 years ago that you got to join the established and esteemed group on the wall at the Glen Club.
Oh, a big thrill for me, no question about it. A lifetime memory, to be sure. This year's class, I think that it one stands out for me. Well, two really do, I suppose. But Gary Pins winning five Illinois Opens. I mean, nobody has done that. I feel like Gary's induction is long overdue. I'm really glad he's going in. And of course, on a personal note, I've been a long-time supporter of Phil Kozen, who I used to work with quite closely with the with Chicagoland Golf, and he created the Illinois Women's Open. That's really Phil passed on in 2009, and was a very good friend of mine. So I'm delighted.
Well, on yesterday we had the annual luncheon for the Women's Western Golf Association, and it was really nice to see Sandra Fulmer again, who was named this year's Woman of Distinction by the WWGA. Quite a playing career that she had that spanned many years in the Chicago area and beyond.
Yeah, you know, she was just a great amateur player. Her the times when she was at her peak somewhat preceded the arrival of the ladies' professional golf tour. She played against some of those players in smaller tournaments and certainly could hold her own, but she had just a wonderful amateur career, both across the pond and within the Chicago ranks. And she, Sandra, did a lot of things for the Women's Western Golf Association beyond just being a good player. So kudos to her. It was a really a nice day and an event to see her get her just due.
Well, on last night, we got to have a little fun down at our good friend Mike Monroe's Green Street Grill in Bensonville, and got to sample a brand new, we'll call it a golf beer, designed by our good friend Dave Lynx Lockhart, who's been part of the 360 golf program here in Chicago for several years, currently working with former Chicago Bear Patrick Manley. But Dave got to do and help create a golf beer, Lynx Lager, with a suburban brewery, and tasted pretty darn good, I have to admit.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. I tell you, I know everybody had a good time last night. It seems to be the new thing now that clubs and courses and maybe individuals and so forth, they honor whatever they're trying to promote by. I thought that was really good beer. Obviously, I had more than one over there last night. So good luck to Lynx. I think that's a great fun project. It was certainly a fun night.
It certainly was. And, you know, some of the courses have created their own beer of late. And I don't have issues with any of them. I've enjoyed the Cog Hill Pale Ale or Long Drive Ale that they created there. Also, Mistwood has Mistwood 100. And Aaron Hills, our friends at Aaron Hills in Wisconsin with the Aaron Hills Pilsner. And all of those beers have been really good. So if you enjoy a little beer during or after your round of golf, those are places that are working with local breweries to create their own taste. And, you know, I know that, you know, our radio partner, Ed Stevenson, and his group at the DuPage County Forest Preserve District, the new clubhouse is open at Preserve at Oak Meadows, and they're bringing in a lot of locally brewed beers over there. And I know there's some talk of maybe they will create, you know, some kind of preserve pilsner or something like that down the road as they settle into that clubhouse a little bit more. And if they do, for one, I'm one guy who would love to see it and taste it.
I'm with you. I would want to be one of the first tasters, to be sure. And I'm sure Ed will have something along that line, and sooner rather than later.
Both of us were out at the Knollwood Club in Lake Forest on Tuesday to see the final Illinois PGA Major of the year, the Players' Championship wrap up, and quite a win by Curtis Malm, the director of golf at White Eagle. Malm actually birdied the last hole, and Brian Carroll only needed a par on 18 to force a playoff, but could not get up and down from a bunker. He hit a great bunker shot because to a back pin and only had about 15 feet, hit what looked like a very good putt, but unfortunately for him, just slid past the cup. And Malm was barely making it into that field, but he did and made the most of his opportunity.
Curtis isn't, he's got some demands on him over there as director of golf now at White Eagle, and a club that's going to be doing some big things, you know, in the near future. But, and he doesn't play nearly as much as he used to. I mean, but he's remained one of the best players in the Illinois PGA. He's won five major titles. He just needs to, he won two of them twice, the Players and the Match Play. And then he won the Illinois Open back in 2000 when he was still an amateur. But he's just one win in the Illinois Section Championship away from taking on the Illinois PGA Grand Slam. So we'll be watching him down the road when the season starts again next spring.
Well, there is a group of Illinois PGA professionals that are just missing, you know, one major to complete the Grand Slam. I know Travis Johns just needs a Illinois Open, and I believe there's another player in the section that is still just only one major away. So we've got a few guys out there that they're gonna have to go after that certain event and see if they can complete the Grand Slam. Also, what was determined on Tuesday, in addition to Curtis Malm winning the final major of the year, is we saw Skokie Country Club's Garrett Chassard win enough points to end up as the 2021 Illinois PGA Player of the Year.
Garrett's really a good player. He won that award in 2019 as well, so he's won it twice in the last 3 years. A very solid player, a member of Mike Small's first recruiting class at Illinois back in 2001, I believe. You know, he's really done. He's mainly an instructor. That's his job, and he's one of the best. But he shows he can still play, too.
Another thing that came out of Tuesday at the Knollwood Club was both Curtis Malm and Illinois PGA Executive Director Kerry Williams making it official that the Illinois Open will return to White Eagle Golf Club in 2022. They had a great event there in 2020 in spite of being a little bit more in the height of the pandemic. And I'll tell you what, it was an event that was well-received by the club, a strong turnout of not just members, but some of the neighbors and the adjoining homes came out to watch the golfers play. And I got to believe that a lot of the Illinois Open field that played there last year will look forward to going back to White Eagle in 2022. And, of course, Curtis Malm sort of breaking the news with Golfers on Golf that the board of directors there at the club is the latest Chicago area club to approve a large capital improvement plan. There's $12.5 million, and they're going to be building paddleball courts and indoor golf simulators, work on the golf course, also do some clubhouse improvements, and they really want to push to make their facility more of a year-round destination for its members, even in the cold winter months of the Chicago area.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of clubs will see moving in that direction. I'm especially happy to see White Eagle do it, because when White Eagle first opened, it was a site for 3 years for an LPGA event, then known as the Sun Times Challenge and the Sun Times Shootout. It had different names, but my old newspaper was a presenting sponsor of it back in those days. It's still got a fine golf. It had a fine golf course, but it's nice to have those better golf courses in the area open their doors to big events like that, so people can not just play it more, but have a look at it. So kudos to White Eagle. That's a great things they're doing, and I'm sure they'll have another real good Illinois Open next year.
Kerry Williams also saying that the other three sites for 2022 Illinois PGA Majors have not been yet decided. They're in negotiations with a few different clubs, and they expect to have the announcements on those other sites perhaps as early as February of 2022. Len, another story on the national scene getting some play here is that Jimmy Johnson, who caddied for Steve Stricker and among some other players more recently, Justin Thomas, has informed Thomas after the Ryder Cup that he's looking to pursue some other opportunities. And Johnson, who apparently wanted to retire 2 years ago until his wife did a little research and saw that Justin Thomas was a player that had some potential and a good moneymaker for the Johnson family. His wife said, get back out there for at least another year or two. And he's been out here with Justin now for a couple years. And he didn't apparently get into some of the things he'd like to pursue. But as a result, Justin Thomas is going to need a new caddy. It did also come out that that new caddy for Thomas is going to be Phil Mickelson's old caddy. Jim Bones Mackay is coming out of a four-year TV gig to get back on the golf bag.
Announced today that Bubba Watson and his caddy of long time, 15 years I believe it was, they're splitting up. They have a very amicably, but they both had some long talks about where they were headed. And so Bubba, who's won, you know, he's been played very well. He's had a great career, won a couple Masters. He's going to be needing a new guy on his bag. So we'll probably hear of a few more along that line before before January comes around. And I think it'll be interesting to who's caring for who, come the rest of the next season.
Well, Len, you've been up here and bopping around Illinois and Wisconsin and Indiana and Michigan now for a month and a half or so, and I guess you're getting ready to head back towards the new homestead in Florida and check on developments on the club that resides right at the back end of your backyard.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. We come to Chicago on three separate occasions over the summer, and we've really enjoyed getting back with our friends and having fun like we've been having lately here. We'll be going back to Palmare Country Club in Sarasota, which has got us intrigued as well, because in November, the Dick Wilson-designed Champions course there, scheduled to reopen. It's been being renovated by Mike Bankuski, an architect who lives in Lake in the Hills, and we're really excited to see what Mike's finished product will look like. We've looked out of our window at the 11th green now for about 3 or 4 months when we are back there in Florida, and it looks like it's going to be a good one. So that's the first thing we're going to be looking to do once we get back there.
Well, Len, there's some breaking news this morning, speaking of course renovation, and a course that, because of the pandemic and its situation, had trouble being maintained while it was closed, is going to get a massive restoration in the old classic C.B. McDonald, Seth Rayner, Yale University golf course. Yeah. Gil Hanse is coming in, and it's going to take $25 million to fix the golf course. And the initial report says that the course could be closed for at least 20 months, much of next year, all of 23, and a good portion of 24 before it reopens. It'll be interesting to see what Gil Hanse is going to do there.
Gil Hanse is the head architect of our era at the moment. I mean, there's a lot of good architects, but that Yale course has been very, I don't know the golf in the East is at Yale, for instance. I've never seen that course, and it hasn't been a tour course, but that's at that price tag, that's almost like creating a whole new golf course. I mean, it's hard to look on that as a necessarily a renovation. I always that term has always kind of intrigued me. A lot of these renovations, you don't even know it's the same course when it's all done. But I'm sure they know what they're doing there. That course has had a very, very good reputation for a long, long time.
It sure has, and I wish I could remember the name, but there's a facility out there that announced that it's tearing down its clubhouse and is going to build a $25 to $26 million clubhouse, just a clubhouse. And you and I have talked about new clubhouses around here, and of course, none of them have come anywhere close to that price tag, and we will continue to follow those things as it develops, and including you and I made a stop over at Fox Run and Elk Grove, and they're hoping to have golfers being in their new clubhouse in early November. So we'll wait and check out the opening at Fox Run over in Elk Grove. With that, Len, that wraps up Zeman Spears podcast series 2021, volume 30. And we'll look forward to talking to you in about another week back from the sunshine state of beautiful and warm and sunny Florida.
We'll have a lot to say.